Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Read by Rhea314. Fandom, Yuri on Ice, pairing Katsuki Yuri, Viktor Nikiforov. Chapter 1. Hasetsu, Part 1. By the time Yuri is 8, he has only seen 4 soul marks up close. The first soul mark he sees is his mother's. It is a purple and red spot on her forearm, high on the soft flesh towards her inner elbow, and an exact replica of his father's. Like many matches, his parents do not mind if their mark is exposed. They do not flaunt it, because they're not the kind of people to do so, but neither do they flinch when they absently roll up the maroon sleeves of their yukata. "Does it hurt?" Yuri asks when he is young, long before puberty hits and his mark manifests. He does not like the look of his mother's unique mark. It looks like a day-old bruise, if bruises were permanent and perfectly circular. "No," Hiroko laughs, her eyes crinkling in the corners. "At least, not in the way you think it does." Yuri is skeptical. Like all children, he is too young to understand the hidden meaning behind his mother's reply. Unlike most children, however, the mystery clings to him and fills him with anxiety. "Are you sure it doesn't hurt?" he asks, thin and cautious, when his older sister Mari begins to manifest at 12. "It doesn't feel like anything," Mari says with a shrug as she idly scratches at the darkening mark, a brown spot on her shoulder that, if Yuri squints, looks like a ginkgo leaf. "It just is." Marks are private things, and, often, the only people who know about them are immediate family members and close friends. There are exceptions, of course. Mark bearing varies across cultures and, in some cases, bloom in places that are difficult to cover, across the cheek or chin, on a finger or the back of a hand, in the corner of an eye, in the cradle of a palm. Yuri's ballet teacher, Minako, is one such person. "Tiny, isn't it?" Minako whispers one day after class, as Yuri waits for his sister to finish her club activities and pick him up from the studio. "My mark." Yuri blushes. He knows it's rude to stare at a stranger's mark, even if it's intentionally bared, so he quickly averts his gaze and pretends not to know that, up close, the small dark thing under Minako's left eye looks like a rosebud waiting to unfurl. "Sorry," he stammers. His fists tighten, and he braces himself for a scolding. "I didn't mean to." Yuri is interrupted by a loud guffaw. He jumps in his seat, startled by the noise, and looks back up instinctively. He is surprised to see a mirthful grin on his instructor's face, wide and full of teeth. "Don't apologize, Katsuki-kun," Minako assures him. "It's okay to be curious." Yet, despite Minako's declaration, it takes Yuri months to look at her directly. He does not know why the sight of another person's mark unsettles him. He only knows that it does, and he tries his hardest to avoid the subject. For a while, for a little over 3 years, it works. Then, Yuko, who is halfway through 14, turns to Yuri and says, "Can I show you something?" Yuko's mark is petal pink and amorphous, a faint, cherry-sized splash of color near her belly button. It is so pale it is nearly invisible against the ivory of her skin. Yuri feels his face heat when she shows him. It is not unusual for close friends to share their marks, but something about the one-sided exchange makes Yuri feel strange, as though he stepped off the wrong foot into a jump. "Did it hurt?" Yuri asks, his tongue thick in his mouth. "No," Yuko shakes her head as she pulls her shirt back down. Yuri does not think she's conscious of the way she presses her fingers down on the mark. "I just got into the shower a couple of weeks ago, and it was just there, you know?" Yuri does not know. He just turned 12, and most boys manifest between the ages of 13 and 17. "Why do you ask?" Yuko says. "Are you worried?" "No," Yuri answers honestly. "I just..." Yuri does not know how to describe the anxious flutter he feels beneath his breastbone whenever he sees a soul mark. He wants to say it feels too intimate, like he's seen the heart of a secret he was not meant to understand. But he cannot name such nervousness without also talking about the faint underscore of his anticipation. His emotions feel like they're being balanced on an uneven rocker. If he doesn't want to fall, he cannot lean either way. "It's okay," murmurs Yuko, as the silence stretches between them. "I understand." The quiet words don't feel like platitudes, and, briefly, Yuri hopes that his mark will bloom identical to Yuko's. He has always admired her skating and is grateful for her kindness. It would be nice, he thinks, to be her match. Yuri's vague hopes are dashed less than a month later, when Yuko has an accident during practice. It is a nasty fall, the kind that makes Yuri gasp and Nishigori swear. "Yu-chan!" Yuri calls as he quickly skates over, Nishigori not far behind. He immediately kneels when he reaches her, his hands hovering in a strange show of uncertainty. "Yu-chan, are you okay?"
"I think so," Yuko groans in response. "Just let me..."
She winces as she unfurls from fetal position, as she rolls from her side onto her back. Her sweater rides up and exposes her belly.
"Yeah..."
Nishigori goes still. Yuri glances at him. Nishigori can get a little strange about Yuko, especially during the competitive season. But the wide-eyed, slack-jawed expression on his face is not one Yuri expects. Normally, Nishigori falls in some degree between stoic and annoyed, so his surprise is surprising. "Nishigori?" Yuri says hesitantly, at the same time Yuko shrieks, "Takeshi!" Yuri looks down and immediately wishes he hadn't, because Nishigori's hand, his bare, blunt hand, is splayed possessively over Yuko's soul mark. Every muscle in Yuri's body tenses. Touching someone else's mark without permission is a violation. Seeing it makes a bubble of wrongness rise in Yuri's throat. Then, Nishigori whispers,
"That's mine."
Yuko's gloved hands, closed over Nishigori's forearm like a vice, loosen. Her eyes get bigger, and her lashes, already damp from the hurt of her fall, flutter against her flushed cheeks as she blinks. Then, small and soft, she whispers,
"What?"
Nishigori shifts all of his weight to his knees and uses his free hand to lift the hem of his shirt over the powerful line of his stomach. Helplessly, Yuri watches as Nishigori exposes his own soul mark. Hidden behind a sparse veil of hair, Nishigori's mark is petal pink and amorphous, a faint, cherry-sized splash of color near his belly button. There can be no denial. Yuko and Nishigori are a match. Upon this realization, the visceral, not quite nausea feeling in Yuri's throat is immediately replaced by a sharp stab of mortification. Mark-bearing is supposed to be a private, intimate act. Many people regard it as one of the most important moments in their lives, and here Yuri is, crouched on the ice sitting beside Yuko and Nishigori, as they stare at each other in unconcealed wonder. He knows that the situation is unusual, but that knowledge does not stop him from feeling like an intruder.
I'm gonna...
Yuri stammers as he stands, his legs wobbling uncharacteristically beneath him. He cannot find his balance.
I should go.
Neither Yuko nor Nishigori pay any attention to Yuri's attempts. They're too absorbed by the sight of their mark to pay attention to anything else. And Yuri turns and flees before an excuse can pass his lips. His blades cut sloppy and hard into the ice. Consumed by embarrassment, he does not focus as he steps off the rink and stumbles towards the bench. He keeps his head relentlessly down as he fumbles with his laces. He does not want to trespass on Yuko and Nishigori's bearing any more than he already has. It takes Yuri an eternity to remove his gear, throw it in his gym bag, and leave. The frigid air nips at his burning cheeks and ears as he runs out of the arena. Winter is nearing its deepest, most bitter days, and even Yuri, who spent long hours on the ice, thinks it's cold. His lungs sting when he inhales. The sharpness, however,
is not enough to distract him from the memory of Nishigori's hand as it closed over Yuko's mark. It plays over and over again in his brain, a terrible unending loop. The harder he tries to ignore it, the clearer and more stark the image becomes. Overwhelmed and distracted by the incident, Yuri relies solely on muscle memory to find his way home. He immediately drops his bag when he arrives, wiggling out of his boots and shrugging off his coat. He will be scolded later for leaving a mess in the public entryway, but at the moment, he does not care. All he can think about is the warmth of his bed and the safe cocoon of his blankets. Heedlessly, Yuri sprints up, down the long hall, and up the stairs. The quiet solitude of his bedroom is a relief, the shock of adrenaline dying as soon as he bundles himself in his sheets and sinks into the mattress. It is in this draining aftermath that Yuri, spread thin and unsure, falls asleep. "Are you okay?" Mari asks that evening, as Yuri pokes idly at his dinner. "You're acting weird." "Yeah," Yuri mumbles distractedly, elbow on the table, cheek smushed into the heel of his palm. He is groggy from his late nap, and, though his earlier panic has subsided and turned into careful, avoidant apathy, he still feels a numb buzz beneath his skin. "Wanna talk about it?" she says. Yuri looks up from his picked-at meal, alarm sparking in the back of his brain. He knows that his sister means well. However, he also knows that if he tells her the truth of what happened, she will laugh at him for his discomfort and tease him. It will not be done out of maliciousness nor meanness, but misunderstanding, as Mari has always been more comfortable about soul marks than Yuri. "No," Yuri shakes his head. "I just had a bad day at practice." "Anything specific?" Mari pries. "No," lies Yuri. "Ah," Mari exclaims, devoid of any emotion. Yuri has never been able to tell if she believes his falsehoods or if she merely lets him get away with them. "Well, you know that sometimes those things just happen, right? Bad days? Sometimes for no reason. The best you can do is just..." Mari pauses momentarily, her shoulders rising in an exaggerated shrug. "Accept it, I guess, and keep going." "Yeah," Yuri says. "I can, yeah." Mari nods and thankfully drops the conversation. The rest of their meal is spent in comfortable silence, interrupted only by the distant murmur of the television in the main room and the quiet clatter and scrape of their chopsticks against their plates. It is peaceful, not so much that Yuri can forget his anxiety, but enough for him to softly thank his sister when they finish. She smiles at him, ruffles his hair, and says, "Anytime, kiddo, anytime." Thanks for listening. This has been Chapter 1 of Solo and Pear. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thanks for listening. Solo and Pear by Kelsey Septine. Chapter 2. Hasetsu, Part 2. Unable to face Yuko and Nishigori, Yuri pretends to be sick the next day, and the day after that. He tries again the third day, but is unsuccessful. "Mom knew you were faking it," Mari tells him as they walk to school, bundled up against the snow in thick coats, heavy boots, and knotted scarves. Her tone is petulant. "I can't believe she let you stay home for 2 days. She never let me stay home even when I was actually sick. You're so spoiled, God." Yuri does not feel spoiled. He feels jumpy and agitated, on edge and off balance. "I can't believe she let you miss practice, too," Mari continues to lament. "Both ice skating and ballet? I mean, I know you're a better kid than I was, but Mom could at least try to hide the favoritism." Yuri buries his face deeper into the folds of his heavy scarf and keeps his eyes firmly downcast. It's not Mari's complaints that cause him distress. Yuri is used to the way she can be harsh in her honesty, but the mention of his skipped practices? Normally, Yuri skates or dances for several hours every day. Not going to the ice rink or studio has left him with an excess amount of energy to burn. "Going tonight, aren't you?" Mari asks. Yuri blinks up from the icy sidewalk and says, "Huh?" Mari huffs. Practice, she reiterates. Are you going? Or do you want to meet me here? She gestures vaguely to the school entrance behind her, the iron gates tall and open. Oh. Yuri's teeth dig into his bottom lip, a brief sting to order his thoughts. No, I'm going to the ice rink tonight. One of Mari's eyebrows touches her hairline. To practice, Yuri blurts. You are so weird, Mari says. Whatever, I'll see you at home, okay? Okay, says Yuri. Mari ruffles his hair before she heads into the courtyard. Yuri watches her until she disappears, swallowed by the massive throng of other darkly clad high school students. With her and her distracting chatter gone, it's harder for Yuri to continue. He clutches the straps of his backpack in his mitten-clad hands and forces himself forward. His primary school is only 5 blocks westward, a small journey, but every step is a struggle. It's not school Yuri dreads. It is his skate practice that comes inevitably after. Yuri knows that his apprehension is silly. The bearing had been an accident, and Yuri's involvement had been unintentional. No fault rests with him. As soon as he realized what happened, he'd left. Besides, Yuko had shared her mark with him prior to her fall, and it had been Nishigori's decision to bear his mark in a public space. Yuri knows intellectually that he is blameless. Emotionally, however, Yuri feels otherwise. As his school day progresses, Yuri tries not to dwell on it. The harder he tries, however, the harder it is to ignore. He is restless from a lack of exercise and stressed by an abundance of anxiety. All day, his brain does nothing but create 1,000 different scenarios about how Yuko and Nishigori will behave in response to his accidental voyeurism. Each imagining is more terrifying than the last, and, by the time the final bell sounds, Yuri is a bundle of nerves. Nothing bad is going to happen, Yuri tells himself as he takes the bus to Hasetsu Ice Castle. Nothing bad is going to happen, nothing bad is going to happen, nothing bad is going to happen. Yuri feels nauseous as he stumbles past the main entrance and into the empty locker rooms to change. His nervousness is a physical thing inside him. It takes up too much space and makes his movements feel awkward and unsure. He leans on the wall for support as he walks out to the rink, trying and failing to be silent as his hard guards smack against the floor. His caution does not matter as neither Yuko nor Nishigori immediately notice his presence. They're on the rink, too far away to hear him or see him behind the benches. They're skating in tandem, their bodies building speed for a jump. No, Yuri thinks as the strains of a soft, blooming piano piece filter from Yuko's portable boombox. They're skating together. As one, Yuko and Nishigori enter a 3-turn, plant their left toe pick into the ice and vault into the air. Neither of them rotate their upper bodies too early, and, after 2 full counterclockwise rotations in the air, they both land perfectly on the back outside edge of their right foot. For a blissful moment, Yuri forgets his anxiety. It is the first time he has seen either of them land a double toe loop jump. Then Yuko turns to Nishigori, smiles so brightly Yuri can see it halfway across the rink, and throws herself into his open, waiting arms. Nishigori laughs and picks Yuko up completely, spinning gently on the ice. Yuri averts his eyes and swallows around the lump in his throat, while he once again feels like an intruder. A small part of him is jealous. It would have been nice, it would have been easy to be Yuko's match. She has always been patient with him, gentle and supportive and kind. There is no guarantee that Yuri's match will be any of those things. Did you see that? Yuko calls, her voice carrying over the low electrical hum of the rink. Yuri, did you see? There's a familiar sound of blades scraping against the ice, and when Yuri looks up, Yuko is hanging over the low partition, her grin so wide that all her teeth are exposed. Behind her, Nishigori's normally impassive face is touched by elation. Yeah, Yuri stammers. He has to clear his throat to speak. It was, I mean, good job. Yuko's smile dims and turns to concern. She tilts her head to the side and squints at him. Then she asks, "Are you sure you're feeling better?"
Yuri blinks at the sudden question and sputters, "What?"
"Minako-sensei said you were sick," Yuko continues.
She juts her narrow chin forward.
"You missed both her class and practice, and you never miss practice. Are you sure you're well enough to skate?"
"I'm not."
Yuko cuts off his protest, saying, "Don't lie to me, Yuri. I know when you're lying. I've known you since you were 4.
Yuri's gaze twitches away from Yuko's serious stare and meets Nishigori's. It has always been difficult for Yuri to interpret the older boy's emotions, but there is no mistaking his small shrug.
"What do you want me to do?" the action says. "You know how she is."
"I'm not sick," Yuri murmurs. My stomach hurt."
Because he's staring at the bright red tips of his plastic guards, Yuri does not see the way Yuko's worried expression becomes empathetic. His feeling about soul marks, about getting one, about seeing one, about matching one, are sensitive, complex, and inexplicable. Calling him out would be an unnecessary cruelty, so Yuko ignores the truth and falls back from the partition.
"Okay," she says instead, "but you're only doing warm-ups, turns, and steps today. No spins or jumps, got it?"
"Got it," Yuri replies. Days become weeks, become months. And as time passes, the harshness of winter bleeds slowly into the sweetness of spring.
"Yuri!"
Yuko calls out one afternoon after practice, her voice echoing across the rink. Yuri feels his shoulders tense. It has been over 3 months since the mark-bearing accident, but he still half expects either her or Nishigori to finally bring it up.
"Come on, it's about to start!"
Okay, Yuri shouts back. "Be there in a second." Yuri completes a few more laps to cool down, skating in lazy turns around the rink. Once his heart rate is back to normal, and the chilly air against his sweat-damp neck starts to feel actually cold, he steps off the ice, snaps his hard guards over his blades, and trudges to the employee lounge Yuko's parents let them use. The television is on, predictably turned to the World Junior Finals, and Yuko is sitting on a bench with Nishigori. She's leaned comfortably against his side, and he has one burly arm wrapped naturally around her tiny waist. Since they discovered they were soulmates, Yuko and Nishigori have steadily grown closer and begun to date. Their relationship is quiet and hesitant, in the way young teenagers often are, and it subjects Yuri to a new level of intimacy, prolonged hand-holding, shy hugs, and timid kisses. It is deeply embarrassing for him to witness. Perhaps it would not be so embarrassing if Yuri had not also witnessed their bearing, but there is nothing he can do about that. Quickly averting his eyes, Yuri sits a little further down on the bench and turns his attention to the figure skater on the television screen. It's a young Frenchman, barely older than Yuri himself, launching into a quadruple salchow. He wobbles a little when he lands, but Yuri, who always falls on his face when he attempts any kind of quad, frowns. "He's good, but I'm more excited for Viktor Nikiforov's performance," Yuko says. Out of the three of them, she is the one who keeps track of competitions and championships, of skaters and coaches, of awards, accolades, and achievements.
"He's such a good skater. I think I cried the first time I saw him. His routine is also the hardest compared to the other skaters. If he nails it, he's going to win."
Yuri watches the French skater sit with his coach in the kiss and cry, and receive a score that puts him in 4th. The skater bows his head at the results while the coach gently takes him by the shoulders, gets him to his feet, and walks him away from the cameras. Yuri cannot imagine that kind of devastation. He hates to lose when he competes in small local events. He does not know what he would do if he lost on an international level.
"Here he comes! Here he comes!"
Yuko chirps excitedly after the announcers briefly dissect the previous performer.
"Viktor Nikiforov!"
Viktor is, in a word, stunning. His long hair is the same color as an overcast winter day, and his eyes are as bright and as deep as the clean ice of a glacier. Such paleness contrasts the darkness of his costume and makes him look both delicate and strong. When he skates, both hands splayed oddly over his chest, He is simultaneously fluid and immovable. Huh, Yuko mutters, as Victor takes position in the center of the ice. Why does he have... The music starts. Victor tilts his head towards the unseen sky and pulls his hands away from his chest. For a moment, the camera captures the enormity of the gesture. Mouth gently parted, eyes full of longing, palms upward in supplication, before it zooms in and... Yuri inhales sharply because... That's... Nishigori chokes because... Wow! Yuko gasps because... Victor Nikiforov's mark is bared for the entire world to see. It is shocking. Yuri knows that while some cultures consider bearing taboo, most cultures merely consider marks private. Often, marks that cannot be hidden by clothing are hidden by customized bands or special foundation. Very few cultures display their marks for everyone to see. Marks, after all, are the manifestation of a single soul split into multiple bodies. And Yuri knows that Russian culture is not one of these. Social mores aside, it is hard to deny the impact of Victor's enormous mark. It starts in the middle of his chest and radiates out like a star. Tendrils venture down to his diaphragm, out onto his pectorals, and up over his collarbones. The mark is shockingly white, paler even than Victor's ivory skin, and slightly raised like an old scar. Framed perfectly by the low, black velvet collar of his costume, Victor's mark is beautiful. Victor stands on the ice with his arms spread for several seconds. He lets the shock of his bearing ripple through the crowd. When this shock crescendos, just before the astonishment can dissolve into confusion, Victor begins to skate. His steps are slow and measured, easy even. Then, with no warning save for the twist of his hips, he pivots into a flawless triple-triple, and the crowd bursts into applause. The performance is done without mistake or hesitation. The music is amazing, the choreography is unexpected and stunning, and Victor's skill is beyond compare. The whole thing makes Yuri feel as though he were reaching for something just beyond his grasp, something that he wants but cannot have. He is filled with anticipation, a sensation that continues to build even when Victor stops. Oh my God! Yuko half screams, as Victor quietly pulls his hands back to their original position over his soul mark, his palms cradled gently over his heart. Oh my God! Did you... Oh my God! Did everyone see? Yuko has stood up and is gesturing wildly to the television screen, where Victor is stepping off into the kissing cry. His coach, a balding Russian man in a red and white tracksuit, pulls him into an enormous hug. Yuri notices for the first time that his body is straining so far forward that he is in danger of falling off the bench. He scoots back a little and tucks his gloved hands underneath his thighs. That was amazing! Yuko gushes, gesturing frantically with her hands. It was, I thought, who does that?
Victor Nikiforov, apparently. Nishigori deadpans.
Oh my God, Takeshi! Whines Yuko at her soulmate's teasing. Were you even watching the same thing I was? That was... As Yuko devolves further, Yuri watches the judges' score appear in a neat line on the bottom of the television screen. It is a new world record. It beats the old record by an impossible and clean 7 points. Yuri's heart flutters high in his throat as the camera zooms in on Victor for his reaction. That is insane! Yuko exclaims as Victor closes his eyes. He presses his fingers against his lips as he kisses them. As he touches the kiss to the center of his soul mark, his mouth moves. The microphones surrounding him do not pick up what he says. But they do not need to. A thank you is universal. That was... Victor, Yuri thinks. It was all Victor. A year later, when Victor gets silver for his division at the ISU World Figure Skating Championship, Yuri enters puberty. His voice begins to break, his joints ache with a stretch of growth, and, when the last snow melts and the cherry blossoms unfold, Yuri's mark blooms, painless and white, above his heart. You have been listening to Chapter 2 of Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening. Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine, read by Rhea 314. Chapter 3, Hasetsu, Part 3. Yuri's mark takes a week to bloom. It starts innocuously. Yuri has just stepped out of the shower and is brushing his teeth when he catches an oddity in his reflection. Confused, he grabs the hand towel and wipes the lingering condensation off the mirror, the water droplets clumping and streaking beneath the swipe of rough cotton. Then Yuri squints, and squints some more. What? He thinks, as he peers curiously at his chest. There's a small, uneven patch of raised skin above his sternum. It isn't hematic like a bruise, nor is it the inflamed red of a rash. Did I hurt myself? Carefully, Yuri presses his fingertips against it. When it does not ache or sting after this initial touch, he pushes down harder. Nothing. Huh. Yuri mumbles around his toothbrush. Weird. Yuri does not stare at his chest for much longer. The steamy air in the bathroom is beginning to lose heat, and the curl of his damp hair against his neck is giving him goosebumps. So he mentally shrugs, spits into the sink, and continues on with his morning routine. By the time he is in school, sitting in his desk and copying his teacher's notes off the whiteboard, Yuri has forgotten about it. Days pass, and the peculiar thing on Yuri's chest does not disappear. It grows, spreading outward onto his pectorals, downward towards his stomach, and upwards to his throat. It is also turned white, bleached of melanin, and fibrous in the same way old scars are. What is this? Yuri wonders as he peers at himself in the mirror. It kind of looks like a spider's web. The center of it is roughly circular and directly above his heart. It does not itch, but Yuri still grinds the heel of his palm against it. No, it's more like an explosion or a star. A star? Realization hits Yuri like his body hits the ice after a bad jump, and he yanks his hand violently away from his mark. A wave of deja vu sweeps through him. The act of pulling his hand away from his chest makes him think of the way Viktor Nikiforov had exposed his soul mark to the world at the beginning of his junior world's free skate. His mark was white too, thinks Yuri. Viktor's mark had also been distinctive, undeniable, enormous. It may be too early to tell. Marks can take anywhere between a few days and a few weeks to bloom. But maybe once Yuri's mark has manifested, he can... No, Yuri protests aloud, casting the thought aside as abruptly as it had appeared. He squeezes his eyes shut, his hands tighten into fists against the cool sink countertop. No, I'm not. I can't be. Viktor's soulmate. The idea is ridiculous. Viktor is an internationally known record-breaking figure skater, and Yuri is a relative nobody who can't even land a triple toe. Yuri is projecting. He admires Viktor immensely and hopes to compete against him one day, but it would be the height of narcissism to think that his incomplete mark and Viktor's will match. That he and Viktor are... No, Yuri whispers, stubbornly refusing to even think about the possibility a second time. I'm not. I'm not. Marks can be similar without being matches. Yuri knows this. It's a theme used often enough in popular media, in movies and television shows, in songs and books. Sometimes there are even stories in the news about previous matches being disproved or faked, and the concept of being accused of either makes Yuri's stomach churn. Not that it matters, Yuri realizes. If he never sees. If no one sees, it won't matter. I mean, it's not like he's my anything. 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 I don't. I'm not. It doesn't matter. I just can't. No one can see it. No one, not even Mari or Yuko or Nishigori, or they can't. Yuri glances at his reflection in the bathroom mirror.
He already knows that a majority of his mark will be hidden by his normal clothing. It is the highest point of his mark that worries him, a jagged tendril that creeps over his left clavicle and brushes the base of the tendons in his neck. It is possible that he may need foundation or a special band.
Yuri!
Mari shouts suddenly, banging on the unlocked door. Yuri yelps in surprise, his hands instinctively rising to cover his mark. It is not unlike Mari to walk into the bathroom while Yuri is using it, and the possibility of that happening terrifies Yuri.
Hurry up!
Okay, Yuri shouts back. His adrenaline-filled heart is pounding against the flat plate of his sternum.
I'll be out in a sec.
You have 5 minutes, Mari warns him, or you're walking to school on your own. Yuri scrambles to grab the top half of his school uniform. I'll be out in a sec. Mari scoffs, but does not say anything else as she walks away. Shocked by her interruption and scared of the possibility of her return, Yuri quickly shoves his arms into his long-sleeved shirt, buttons it all the way to his throat, and hastily knots his striped tie. Then, before he dons his socks and his pants, Yuri pauses and checks the left side of his throat to make sure the topmost part of the mark is hidden. It is.
Good,
Yuri thinks. Unfortunately, no matter how hard he tries, Yuri cannot keep the knowledge of his manifestation a secret for long. Congratulations, says Minako one day after class, when Yuri stays late to work on his posture. He has not landed a triple-edge jump since his coach decided that he should start, and his frustration is escalating from mild to severe.
For what?
Yuri asks distractedly.
For your mark,
Minako clarifies. The muscles in Yuri's shoulders and back stiffen. One of his hands flies to his chest to cover his already hidden mark. He turns, wild-eyed, to Minako and sputters,
What?
Minako tilts her head, her fine hair slipping against her cheek. She raises an eyebrow.
I mean...
Yuri chokes, his fingers digging into the elastic material of his unitard.
How did you see?
No, Minako says. The relief Yuri feels at that single word is overwhelming. He lets out a shaky breath and loosens his grip. I only figured it out a couple of days ago.
How?
Yuri queries. I guess I just knew. Minako shrugs, but does not elaborate. Perhaps she cannot. Intuition is a strange and ineffable thing. Don't worry about it, Yuri. Everyone gets their mark sometime. She levels him a knowing look. Now focus on your posture. You need to align your hips. Despite Minako's nonchalant attitude about his mark, Yuri cannot help but overthink it. He stops showering at the rink after practice. He begins to wear multiple layers, high-collared jackets over high-necked crew t-shirts, over athletic tank tops, even though the heat of summer begins to swell. He even stops using the onsen. It is considered polite to ignore marks, but most people don't have manifestations that cover the entire upper half of their torso. After Minako, Mari is the next to find out. She is shocked when Yuri denies her request to see it. Mari, after all, had proudly shown off her mark the moment it began to bloom.
What?
She squawks. You're actually not going to show me. Unable to find the right words, Yuri merely shakes his head and presses a palm to his chest. The gesture is as silly as it is unconscious, because even if Yuri were not fully clothed, his hand would not be large enough to hide the entire blaze of his soul mark.
Why not? Mari prods. Is it ugly?
No, Yuri blurts despite himself. Mari's grin turns smug at his reaction, and he feels his blush darken to crimson.
It's just...
Yuri squirms in discomfort.
It's embarrassing.
The confession makes Mari soften. It's just a mark, she murmurs, unknowingly repeating what Minako had told Yuri several days before. Don't worry about it, okay? Mari's reassurances do not last long, because less than a day later, Nishigori turns to old habits when Yuri refuses to show him his mark.
No,
Nishigori scoffs, fists on his hips. There is an intimidating edge to his tone. Yuri has not heard it in months.
not since before Nishigori and Yuko matched.
What? Are you waiting?
Waiting is the idea that the first time a mark is bared, it is to its match. It is an antiquated notion, the stuff of fairy tales and fate. Waiting is for novels, for movies, for daydreams. It is not for reality.
I'm not waiting,
Yuri mumbles petulantly. His fingers twist in the hem of his jacket. I just...
You've seen Yuko's, and mine,
Nishigori interrupts, as he inches forward on his skates and crowds into Yuri's space. It is the first time Nishigori has acknowledged Yuri's involvement in his and Yuko's mark-bearing accident.
Don't be selfish, Katsuki, it's only fair.
Yuko barrels into Nishigori's side. It knocks Nishigori off balance and sends him sprawling across the ice.
The hell, Yuko?
Nishigori sputters. He sounds more shocked than angry. If it had been someone else who pushed him, Yuri knows the anger would quickly overtake him.
Why did you...
You know why, Yuko snaps, hands on her hips, an unintentional mimicry of Nishigori's previous pose. Stop teasing Yuri. If he wants to wait, let him wait. If he doesn't want to show you his mark, he doesn't have to just because he's already seen yours. Marks aren't an obligation, Takeshi. You know that, so stop being an idiot. Nishigori scowls. It is well known in the community that Yuko's parents are not soulmates. Her father is platonically matched to his twin brother, and her mother's match died in an accident when she was in high school. Unmatched pairs are not common. Generally, soulmates are in close proximity to each other, both in age and physical location. But they're not as rare as it sometimes seems.
Fine, Nishigori snarls as he picks himself up.
He is more hurt by Yuko's reprimand than his fall.
Didn't want to see it that bad anyway.
Nishigori keeps his sullen gaze on the scratched-up ice as he skates back down to the other end of the rink. Once he's out of earshot, or at least too busy aggressively practicing his upright spins to overhear, Yuko heaves a sigh. Sorry about him, she apologizes. She scrubs a mittened hand against her cheek. He's been acting really weird lately.
It's okay,
Yuri says softly.
No,
Yuko murmurs as she watches Nishigori lose his balance.
It's not.
Briefly, wildly, Yuri considers showing Yuko his soul mark. Yuko has always supported him. She is the one who holds out a hand when he falls on the ice. The one who gives him encouragement when he has difficulty with his jumps. The one who believes in him and cheers for him when he competes. If Yuri shows her his mark, he knows that she will not share the secret of it with anyone. But Yuri also knows that once she sees the size and shape of his mark, she will tell him exactly what it looks like. The offer dies on Yuri's tongue. He swallows. His throat is dry. He swallows again. Then, quietly, he ignores the lingering guilt Nishigori inspired in him and asks if Yuko will watch him attempt yet another at triple-edge jump. At the height of summer, when the heat of the season swells unbearably and the cicadas cry late into the humid night, Yuri's parents acknowledge his manifestation. You should have told us sooner. His mother, Hiroko, scolds gently as she hands him a small package over dinner. It is wrapped crisply in red paper and tied with a pre-made golden bow. I know you're not as showy as Mari.
Hey, Mari interjects.
But it is something to celebrate. Yuri does not want to tell his mother about the trepidation he feels every time he accidentally catches a glimpse of his mark. Like all the other people in Yuri's life, she does not share Yuri's misgivings. It had been simple for her and his father, Toshiya. They had grown up together in Hasetsu, married young, and made a comfortable life together. There were no mistaken matches or dramatic revelations. There was only a normal-sized mark on her left forearm, and inevitability.
Well?
Toshiya inquires good-naturedly, as Yuri stares down at his present.
Are you going to open it?
Inside, the square package is 10,000 yen, the same amount of money Yuri gets on his birthday and New Year's, as well as a small enmusubi purchased from the local shrine. The love charm is wrapped in plain blue silk and embroidered in silver thread. The colors make Yuri think stupidly of Viktor Nikiforov's long hair and striking eyes.
His cheeks burn.
Thank you, Yuri stammers as he quickly puts the lid back on the box.
You're welcome, his parents say.
After dinner is done and he can escape to his bedroom, Yuri takes the money and the love charm out of the box. The former goes into his wallet to be spent on new clothing, while the latter goes into the bottom drawer of his computer desk. Yet just before Yuri hides the love charm, he pauses. For a moment, a minute, an hour, he stares at the blue and silver keepsake and allows himself to hope. He does not dare to think of anything or anyone specific. Instead, he thinks of warmth and kindness, of love and support. The want he feels is so strong he can feel it ache.
One day, Yuri murmurs as he presses his palm to his sternum. One day.
Then, with a shake of his head to dispel his amorphous thoughts, Yuri closes the drawer. You have been listening to Chapter 3 of Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening. Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine, read by Rhea314. Chapter 4, Hasetsu, Part 4. Yuri begins his second year of junior high school around the same time his mark manifests. Academically, it is not challenging. Yuri possesses a blessedly sharp memory and a mind for mathematics. But he still works hard to maintain his good grades. Good grades mean a good college, and a good college means more opportunities. He does not know what he wants to do with the rest of his life. He only knows that when the time comes to decide, he wants options outside his family's onsen. Yet, despite Yuri's diligence, school is not his main priority. His coursework is a placeholder, a task he must complete before he can get on the bus, ride to Hasetsu Ice Castle, and skate. And skate Yuri does.
Did you see that? Yuri exclaims when he lands his first triple flip.
He wobbles when he lands, his form uncertain from lack of experience, but he completes the right amount of rotations and stays on his feet.
Yu-chan, did you see?
Every spare moment Yuri has is dedicated to the rink and to Minako's ballet studio. He enters more exhibitions and competitions than ever before, traveling to other cities in the province to perform on unfamiliar ice in front of unfamiliar crowds. His coach, a middle-aged man who is employed part-time by Yuko's parents to teach them more advanced classes, often does not travel with him. Yuri is not his only student, nor is he the most gifted. Even if Yuri was, there would be coaching fees which Yuri's parents could not afford. Instead, Yuri is accompanied by Yuko or Minako or Mari, or some combination of the three.
You don't have to come, Yuri tells them one day when they all go with him to an event in the capital city of Saga.
The train ride is a little over an hour and cuts through the tree-studded center of the prefecture. It is an oddly quiet and uncrowded trip.
I can do this on my own.
Mari clicks her tongue against the back of her teeth, making an annoyed t sound, and gently knocks Yuri upside the head at his words. Yuko hides a laugh behind her hand as Yuri frowns at Mari and rubs the back of his skull.
Don't be stubborn, Mari scolds. Just because you can do it alone doesn't mean you have to.
Yuri is grateful for their steady support. He can get stuck inside his own head sometimes, and he knows that sharing his victories with them makes it easier for him to carry the burden of his losses. It does not dispel his unease completely, however, because even as Yuri's accomplishments grow, so do his fears.
What if I never make it past this? Yuri thinks every time he falls or over-rotates or steps out.
Jumps are hard for him, save ironically for axles. And the thought of never being able to improve fills him with dread and makes him clutch at the permanent anchor of his mark.
What if I never?
Then Yuri will win another medal, or kill his free skate routine, or nail a jump he struggles with, and the nagging doubt will quiet long enough for his hopes to build back up. Over and over again, he thinks. Regionals, Nationals, Grand Prix Series. Regionals, Nationals, Grand Prix Series. Until it becomes a mantra, beating in time with his heart. He wants to compete on an international level so badly
that the want leaves him shaky, jittery, tense. The only cures he's found to soothe the symptoms are either to practice or to eat, and since the latter is counterproductive to his athletic lifestyle, he tries to avoid it. Eerie is not always successful. The food his parents make is meant for comfort, not for slim waistlines. Luckily for Yuri, however, the rink and studio are 15 minutes from Utopia by foot, 10 if he's jogging, and he is welcome in both at any time. Yuko's mother will let him in after hours when she does the books and makes him a cup of instant hot chocolate when it's time to leave. While Minako lives in the rental above her studio and always lets Yuri in the rear entrance. He knows they do not have to open their businesses for him. He is not the only talented figure skater in Hasetsu, so he takes care to quietly thank them every time they do. "Hold out your hand," Minako says one such night. The sun has set and the floor-to-ceiling glass windows are dark enough to reflect their bodies as much as the mirrors on the adjacent wall. "I have something for you." Yuri finishes his stretch, his fingers looped easily around the arch of his foot and his nose bumping the flat of his knee, and sits up obediently, extending his hand. Minako drops a key into his upturned palm. The teeth of it are still sharp from being cut, and metal is untarnished. It is attached to a split ring and a tiny plastic maneki neko.
"What is it?" Yuri asks.
"For the back door," Minako replies. Yuri is shocked. He knows how protective Minako is of her dance studio. Yuri, after all, was one of her first students when she returned to Japan. The fact that she trusts him enough to let him into her studio without her being present is more than intimidating.
"I can't."
"You can," Minako interrupts, closing her hand over his. "You have natural talent, Yuri, ambition, and you back both those things up by working hard." She tightens her grip. "You're gonna go far. I can just feel it. Besides, you need a safe space to practice. What better place than here?" The faith Minako has in him makes Yuri blush, an ugly blotch of red spreading across his cheeks and down his neck. He feels stuck between bewilderment and disquiet, a strange sensation that is tempered by flattery. It would be easiest for Yuri to give the key back, but the key is as much of a gift as it is an expectation. Pushing it back into Minako's hand would be extremely rude.
"Thank you,"
Yuri murmurs as he closes his fingers around the key. He chooses to accept the gesture for what it is rather than what it might mean, especially considering how straightforward Minako is. "You're welcome," Minako says. Then she claps her hands together, a sharp and sudden noise that makes Yuri jump. "Well, since that's out of the way, how do you feel about doing some bar exercises?" As summer fades into autumn, the enormous tree outside Yuri's bedroom window turns gold. It is a bright riot of color against an endlessly overcast sky, but sadly it does not last long. There is an early frost that upsets the tree's yearly cycle and forces the leaves to turn brown. They fall quickly to the ground in a mass abscission, and their delicate, desiccated skeletons litter the yard and pathway. "Come on, Yuri," Mari prompts after she finishes her cigarette. She drops it on the concrete and snubs the smoldering end beneath the heel of her sneaker. "I want to get back before it gets dark out." It is Yuri's 14th birthday. School let out less than half an hour ago, but instead of heading to the rink like he normally would, Yuri came confusedly home. His mother and father had requested it. When he asked for details, they shook their heads and said it was a surprise. His confusion only grows when Mari greets him at the main entrance, dressed in jeans and a soft sweater.
"Do you know what it is?"
Yuri asks, after he changes out of his school uniform and into a pair of gray compression pants and a black thermal jacket. Yuri loves the jacket. It is soft and warm, and the collar covers half his throat when it is zipped all the way up.
"Yep,"
Mari replies, popping the pea.
"And?"
Yuri queries.
"And nothing," says Mari. "You'll just have to wait until we get there."
Yuri does not try to wheedle any more information out of Mari as they get into the family car. She has always been more stubborn than he was, and delighted in making him squirm. He is not too worried, however. Mari's teases have mellowed since they were children,
and Yuri is certain that his surprise is more from his parents than from her. The trip takes about 45 minutes. Mari has put an unfamiliar address into her phone's GPS, and the directions lead them out of Hasetsu, past the sprawling suburbs, and onto a one-lane road that winds into a forest. Like the tree outside Yuri's window, the trees that fly by are nothing but bare branches and veneered frost, all white and gray and brown. It is beautiful in a still and desolate way, and before Yuri knows it, Mari is parking in front of a medium-sized home at the end of a lane in the middle of nowhere. "We're here," Mari announces as she unbuckles her seatbelt. "Come on, Matsuko-san is expecting us." Matsuko is a tall, willowy woman in her mid-50s, who greets Mari with an informal bow and Yuri with a wide smile. The corners of her eyes are soft with wrinkles. Yuri, who often feels uncomfortable around strangers, likes her immediately. "You must be Katsuki-san," she says as she invites them in. Yuri steps out of his shoes and lines them up by several pairs of scuffed boots. "I hear it's your birthday today. 14, right?" "Yes," Yuri says. "A good year," Matsuko confirms, as she leads them out of the entryway and further into her house. It's a nice house, with an open floor plan and an enormous kitchen. Yuri tries not to openly stare, but it's difficult not to. Normal homes, homes that are homes, not homes inside inns, fascinate him. Matsuko must misinterpret his wandering gaze, because she laughs sheepishly and says, "Sorry about the clutter." There's a small stack of dishes in the sink, some mail on the table, and a heavy coat draped over the back of a table. Yuri flushes and sputters, It's not messy, it's just..." He knuckles his sternum as he searches for the right word. "Just different." Mari clicks her tongue at Yuri's strangeness, while Matsuko merely laughs. "I suppose it would be," she agrees, as they round the corner and step into the living area. A huge, comfy couch dominates the room, while a real wood fireplace lies dormant on the far wall. There's a coffee table with a book, half-full mug of tea on it, and several remotes. Yuri barely notices any of this, however, because his attention is immediately grabbed by a cacophony of small, attention-seeking yips. "Ta-da!" Matsuko announces at the same time Mari says, "Happy birthday, Yuri!" In front of Yuri is a small pen of excited miniature poodles. They are tiny balls of curly fluff scrabbling over one another to get Yuri's attention. Their mother, in a corner of the pen, lifts her head and watches carefully as Yuri kneels and sticks his hand against the pen wall for the puppies to sniff. "You can choose whichever one you want," Matsuko tells him. "None of them have been spoken for yet. Normally I keep the dogs for 3 months instead of the usual 2 before I let them go to new homes, but your mother was quite insistent." Matsuko lets him sit in the cage and play with the puppies while she and Mari go back into the kitchen and chat quietly. Yuri is ecstatic. He has always loved dogs, has spent years quietly hoping for one, but any time it came up in conversation, his parents always refused on the grounds that they were simply too busy. "You make a decision?" Mari asks when she and Matsuko return half an hour later. "Yeah," Yuri responds. He had made his decision almost immediately. One of the puppies was all brown, and he had licked Yuri's fingers instead of nibbling at them. He doesn't cry like the other puppies when Yuri picks him up and puts him in the cradle of his arm, either. "I want this one." "Yeah, of course you do," Mari says with a roll of her eyes. "It's just like that skater's dog, isn't it?" "His is a standard," Yuri mumbles, even as he feels himself turn pink. His interest in Viktor Nikiforov is so complete that it is impossible for those around him not to know about it. He just didn't know it was bad enough that his parents knew exactly what kind of dog he would want. "Not the same." Mari raises a skeptical eyebrow. "Shut up," says Yuri. They leave not long after Yuri makes his choice. Matsuko encourages Yuri to call her if he has any questions, then wishes him a happy birthday one last time after he tips back into his shoes. She waves at them as they pull out of the driveway. "So, what are you going to name him?" Mari asks as they head back to Hasetsu. The puppy had whined softly during the first few minutes of the trip,
scared by the movement of the car. Yuri had tightened the small blanket Matsuko gave him around the puppy's trembling body and held him to his chest, just above the bloom of his covered mark. Eventually, the pathetic noises and shivering stopped, and Yuri's heart unclenched. "I think he looks like a Momo. Or a Marin." "No." Yuri shakes his head at the common pet names. "Not those."
"Then what? Kori?"
Yuri shakes his head again. Truthfully, it had not taken him long to think of a name. Victor had entered his brain the moment he ran his hand over the short curls of the puppy's back. But something about it sits oddly in Yuri's stomach. "I want to say Victor," Yuri murmurs honestly, as he scratches his puppy behind one of his floppy ears. "Is that weird?" "Not really," Mari shrugs, never taking her eyes off the road or her hands off the steering wheel. "Plenty of people name their pets after celebrities they like." Yuri contemplates it, but no matter how he approaches it, he still feels a little weird about calling his dog the exact same name as his idol. Victor doesn't have any nicknames that he can use. Victor Nikiforov is Victor Nikiforov, a man so full of talent and surprise that he needs no moniker. Once, Yuri heard his coach call him Vitya in the kiss and cry, but Yuri never believed the Russian diminutive suited the sharpness in Victor's eyes. The Japanese diminutive suits Victor even less when Yuri thinks it. Vichan is too cute, too small. The thought is a revelation. "Vichan," Yuri says, finally, looking down at his dog with a smile. "His name is Vichan." You have been listening to Chapter 4 of Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thanks for listening. Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. Read by Rhea 314. Chapter 5. Hasetsu, Part 5. Vichan quickly becomes one of the few things in Yuri's life that can tempt him away from practice. He turns out to be smart, affectionate, and incredibly well-mannered. He's housebroken within a couple of months and obeys simple commands such as sit and stay not long after that. When they go outside for walks and runs, Vichan trots obediently at Yuri's heel. He rarely barks and never strays, which is a small miracle considering how many other people, how many other dogs, they usually encounter. Yet for all these good qualities, the best thing about Vichan is his unwavering loyalty. Yuri has always had trouble making friends, unable to connect with his peers due to his acute self-consciousness. But with Vichan, Yuri has no shyness. It helps that Vichan greets him with the same unabashed enthusiasm every night Yuri comes home from practice, smelling mostly of sweat and faintly of the chemicals that help keep the rink frozen. "Hey, boy," Yuri murmurs as he kneels and digs his fingers into the soft curls of Vichan's floppy ears. The strap of Yuri's gym bag falls off his shoulder and cuts into bicep, but he cannot adjust it when Vichan demands all of his attention. "Miss me?" Vichan yips in reply. Yuri smiles and takes it as a yes. He rewards Vichan with several uninterrupted minutes of scratches. Vichan squirms happily beneath his hands. Yuri's day ends in an unvaried routine. After he has stepped out of his shoes and dropped his gym bag, he feeds Vichan a scoop of dry food, then heads to the bathroom to take a shower. He used to wash off in the locker rooms before his mark manifested. Now, in order to keep said mark hidden, he waits until he is home to peel off his sweat-stiff clothing. Then he turns on the water and carefully avoids the reflection of his mark in the mirror. Once Yuri is clean and dressed, he heads downstairs to have dinner. His parents are typically in the main room at this time of night, making food for and serving alcohol to overnight guests. If it is busy, Mari helps and Yuri eats alone. If it is slow, Mari sits at the table with him and talks about the annoyances of her day. Sometimes she will prompt Yuri to talk about his day. Often Yuri's answers are simple progress reports on whatever short and free skate program he is currently working on. "Keep it up, little bro," she encourages him when he tells her about the jumps he lands and the spins he's mastered. "You're gonna go far." After dinner, at roughly 9:30, Yuri takes Vichan out for a final walk,
Then there's an hour or two of homework, then a mindless break on the internet, then bed. Yuri is tucked beneath his comforter by midnight, lying curled on his side with Vichon balled up against his stomach. Yuri is always physically exhausted by the end of the day, but sometimes Yuri's mental stress is so great it outweighs the need to sleep. These are bad nights. The nights Yuri doesn't place in a competition. The nights Yuri fears his progress has hit a plateau. The nights when his fears and doubts overshadow his hopes and dreams. The nights he pulls Vichon into his arms, buries his nose into the fur between his shoulder blades, and breathes in the natural and deeply comforting smell of his dog, in an attempt to ignore the vastness of his future. "He's so far ahead of me," Yuri murmurs softly, brokenly, his eyes shut against the fathomless shadows of his room. The inn is quiet save for the tired moaning of old wood. "I don't know if I'll ever be able to catch up. It's just, he's already done so much, and I haven't even made it to regionals." Tears prick Yuri's eyes and clog his throat. "God, I'm just so stupid." Sensing distress, Vichon wriggles in Yuri's arms until he's turned around. He sniffs the salt on Yuri's cheeks, cold and damp nose dragging against Yuri's skin, before he scoots underneath Yuri's chin and lets out a heavy sigh. His legs are tucked against Yuri's mark, uncaring. The innocence of it makes Yuri smile despite his sadness. Yuri sniffs the rest of his tears down and runs a hand over Vichon's small skull. Vichon doesn't care if Yuri had an abysmal score for his last free skate. Doesn't care if Yuri cannot move past certain jumps. Doesn't care about the size or shape of Yuri's soul mark, or its similarity to a certain Russian figure skater's. He loves Yuri simply and unconditionally. Somehow, this knowledge allows Yuri's problems to sink from insurmountable to manageable. "Good boy," Yuri whispers. 14, 15, 16. Every year that passes brings Yuri a step closer to his ultimate goal. Every year also makes him painfully and acutely aware of his position in the figure skating world. Yuri knows he needs to get better. He can only learn so much underneath the part-time dedication of Hasetsu Ice Castle's coach and from the scrutinization of grainy internet videos. He needs someone who can watch him and tell him exactly what his weaknesses are, so he can work on those instead of practicing his steps, spins, and spirals for the 100th, 1,000th, 1,000,000th time. Yet, despite this awareness, Yuri does not know what to do. Personal coaches are not cheap, especially on the level Yuri competes at, and the closest club, where multiple skaters train under one coach, is 3 hours east. He had looked at attending high school in that area, but dismissed the idea. There were no scholarships, and his parents could not afford to pay both skating and living expenses. So, Yuri stays in Hasetsu. Staying may not be the ideal choice, but it's not a terrible one either. Yuri is unafraid of hard work, and the advice from the people around him, as semi-professional and scattered as it may be, helps him perfect his technique skills and routines. Then, 3 months before he turns 17, Yuri qualifies for the tri-regional championship of Chugoku, Shikoku, and Kyushu. "Repeat after me. I can do this," Minako tells him before his short program, her hand squeezing his tense shoulders. She was the only person who was able to accompany him to the 2-day event. Everyone else too busy, with the inn, with school, with life. Yuri knows Minako had to close her studio so he would not have to skate alone, and he is grateful beyond words. "Say it." "I can do this," Yuri says. "I've worked hard for this. I've worked hard for this. My routine is the best because my ballet teacher helped me with the choreography, and not only is she the greatest choreographer in all of Japan, she is also beautiful and kind and..." "Minako-sensei," Yuri interrupts. "If you want me to repeat all that, you'll have to say it slower." Minako laughs, loud and bright, and Yuri grins despite his nerves. "You can tell me later, okay?" Minako smooths her gloved hand over his slicked back hair. Yuri leans into the gentle touch. Then she whispers, "Remember to keep your shoulders loose and follow the line of your body. Good luck." Yuri carries Minako's comfort onto the ice.
His routine is not perfect. He falls on one jump and over-rotates on a combination, but he manages to push himself into a shocking second place, closer in points to the forerunner than last place is to him. Minako screeches in delight when his score is announced, throws her arms around his shoulders, and, hours later, treats him to a crab-rich dinner at a nice restaurant. As the night progresses, however, Yuri's elation wanes into uncertainty. All he can think about is the weight of his score. If he does well enough in his free skate, if he wins the competition, he will qualify for the ISU Grand Prix Series and compete on an international level. He could even potentially meet Viktor Nikiforov, his idol, his inspiration, his reason for reaching beyond the borders of his prefecture. An ache blooms beneath Yuri's mark. "What would I even say?" Yuri thinks as he absently knuckles his sternum. "Thank you? Can I have your autograph? I've been dreaming about this since I saw your Junior Worlds performance in 06. Yeah, the one where you publicly bared your mark, which, looks a lot like..." Yuri stubbornly shakes the daydream out of his head. Hoping to qualify for the Grand Prix Series is one thing. Hoping that Viktor Nikiforov is more than a stranger, however, is something else entirely, and he refuses to contemplate it. Instead, he thinks of his free skate, and every single disastrous thing that could go wrong. "Oh no," Minako says when she sees Yuri the next morning at 9:30. The rink opens for warm-ups at 10, and the second half of the competition begins at 11. "Yuri, you're a mess. Did you even sleep?" "A little," Yuri answers. In truth, he slept in fits and starts, small gaps of unconsciousness between his tosses and turns, and the waning minutes on the clock. "Did you eat?" asks Minako. Yuri pauses. He has been nauseous since he got out of bed. He even vomited after he stumbled out of his morning shower, overheated and unbalanced, and the sour taste of bile still clings to his tongue. Afterwards, he had tried to eat some oatmeal, but had only been successful in choking down a few bites before his stomach roiled. "A little?" Yuri says again. Minako's eyebrows pinch together in concern, and her mouth, painted a flattering shade of red, tightens into a moue. Gently, she touches the heavily gelled strands at Yuri's temples. "Do you want to talk about it?" she whispers. Yuri is quiet and still. "Can you talk about it?" she rephrases. Yuri shakes his head, a tentative but truthful no. His emotions are a mess inside him. His excitement clashes chaotically with his inadequacy, and it scrapes at a fluttering hollow below his diaphragm. Even if he could find the right words, Yuri does not believe his tongue would physically cooperate. "It's okay, Yuri," Minako soothes. "It's okay. We'll just... let's wash out some of this gel, okay? We have time." Minako guides Yuri back to his hotel room, into the white and impersonal bathroom, and sits him down on the porcelain lip of the tub. She grabs one of the spare cotton washcloths from the rack on the wall, and runs the sink until the water turns hot. Then, after she soaks the washcloth, she lightly wrings it out. The heat feels good against Yuri's aching temples. "I used to get stage fright, you know," Minako tells him as she runs the damp cloth over Yuri's skull in long, slow strokes. "It didn't matter if I had performed the dance 1,000 times. Didn't matter if I was familiar with the theater. Didn't matter if I was on my own or in a troupe. As soon as I stepped onto the stage, bam." Minako steps away to rerun the sink and reheat the washcloth. "What did you do?" Yuri murmurs as she crouches back down in front of him. "Well, I tried a lot of things," Minako says with a shrug. With the initial layer of gel gone, she begins to rub apart the clumped together strands. "I tried meditating. I tried smoking. I even tried to imagine the audience in their underwear." She sighs. "Nothing really worked." A droplet of water trickles down from Yuri's scalp over the swell of his cheek. "Nothing?" "Nothing," Minako confirms. "But once I realized that I would never be able to get rid of it, once I realized that my stage fright was a part of me, I also realized that it wasn't that bad. Sure, my brain turned off, and I wanted to run back behind the curtain. But really, my nerves were only bad the first minute on stage. After I worked through it, I was fine. Yuri watches as Minako wrings the cloth out one last time and flips it over the towel bar to dry. He tries to imagine what she would be like if she were flustered, but he has a difficult time doing it. Even when she's drunk too much and is slurring old stories at one of the low tables in the main room, Minako has always been calm, self-possessed, and graceful. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I understand what you're going through. Sure, your stress may build a little differently than mine did, but I've been where you are. I know it sucks. I know it's all you can think about. I know it's driving you crazy. Minako stops to smile, brief and bright. But do you want to know what else I know? Yuri blinks. His vision is blurry. I know you're going to win. Yuri inhales sharply, a quivering half-sob, and he throws his arms around Minako's waist. The smell of her lavender perfume is familiar and comforting, as is the way she hugs him back. He squeezes his eyes shut and focuses on the reassurance of her smell and her touch. Thank you, Minako-sensei, Yuri murmurs into her sweater. Anytime, Yuri, Minako whispers back. Anytime. You have been listening to Chapter 5 of Solo and Pair by Kelsey Septine. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.